Carrasca, Valentine, and the chief decided the ship should be refitted before exploring a potentially hostile coastline, and 2 months in dry dock at Jayport would allow the chief to consummate a long-desired overhaul. There was the added incentive of replacing the losses from the encounter with the shark fin, so in the end, Valentine agreed with yet another delay in his return to El Norte. They returned to the harbor to a mixture of cheers and curiosity over their topiary. There were the inevitable problems with safely storing their precious cargo and finding living space for the crew during the refit, hampered by the occasional tropical storms and hurricanes brushing the island. Valentine, Post, Narcisse, and Anka were left with the leisure to recruit Jamaicans to join his Marines, reduced to a bare handful in the fight against the Reapers. Valentine was shocked to see a soccer field filled with Jamaicans who wished to follow the crying man to sea, off their sunny island and into peril. In the end, he selected 50 for the short run to the coast. The Thunderbolt would be cramped, but it gave him a core of willing men to accompany him on the long trip back to the Ozarks. There was also time with Carrasca as the chief worked on the bow. Long rides into the countryside, talks with the locals, trips to sporting events and lunches made of market square purchases filled the mornings. In the afternoon, when the rains came, they talked or laughed or made love as the mood struck and waited for the cool of the evening to walk back to the ship. Sometimes they spent the night at the Commodore's house, joining him for mahjong or cribbage, depending on the availability of players. The weeks passed like a dream. Valentine had never known so many idle days in all his years serving Southern Command. There was time to know another person, not as a comrade, superior, or underling, but as a friend and lover. He learned her moods, and in turn, Carrasca learned his. They pretended that the respite would never end by not discussing it, talking instead of the perfect hillock for a beach house, or whether Valentine would make a better fisherman or planter. Valentine was more than half willing to take these conversations at face value. Reality intruded when the chief refloated the ship and they had to make ready for the last voyage. Then the idyll was over.
"You're a wanderer too."
Valentine and Carrasca lay together one last time.
"What's that?"
Sex always made him wool-brained.
"You wander. Is it so you don't have to put down roots?"
He rubbed his eyes.
I'm not blown around. It's more like a current."
"Even coconuts wash up by and by. What keeps you at sea?"
"Same as you. Duty."
He would have added something about his dreams of a better future, dreams made almost realistic sounding thanks to the quickwood. Valentine turned on his elbow. The whites of her eyes caught the night sky coming through the window. They looked wet.
"Are you saying I should wash up here?"
He half hoped she'd say yes. He'd get the quickwood back to the Ozarks and return. She didn't say anything for a moment, but her mouth twitched.
"What then?"
"Nothing important. Not as important as our duty."
The Texas coast, October, south of Corpus Christi, the southernmost Korean city in what had been the United States, the coastline is a collection of fishing villages hiding among ancient concrete resorts, suffering under the depredations of both the Korean alcaldes of Mexico and the Texas variety farther north and inland. The long stretches of the thin, sandy island running the coast of Texas provides a protected inland waterway that sees little commerce under cur other than smuggling. Stopping this was one of the gunboat's principal duties in her cruises under Captain Saunders, when her crew spent years losing fugitives in the thorn bushes and grassy hummocks of the half-mile-wide, seemingly endless coastal sandbar, where once vacationing college students lost their underwear along with their virginity. This part of Texas is typical of most of the state, not under the direct eye of the Koreans, independent and isolated, asking nothing from the outside world and trusting no one. The Thunderbolt followed her new prow into South Bay on a rainy dawn. A few open shrimp boats bobbed in the bay, and beyond them, some beach fishermen could be seen, their oversized rods hanging out over the lapping surf of the bay. Valentine had never seen this part of Texas in his time on the Thunderbolt, though Torres had visited this coast on occasion in his days with the Corpus Christi Kerr. Torres was the sole surviving crewman who knew Brownsville, so he stood on the bridge with Carrasca and Valentine. Valentine fingered the leaves on a quickwood sapling. Carrasca had taken a fancy to one and installed it on the bridge. A few others had been planted near Kingsport, bordering the graves of the Jamaicans and Louisiana Thunderbolt crew who had died defending the ship from the Reapers. After explaining to the Commodore the importance of the quickwood saplings, Valentine had placed further seeds in the dirt covering the bodies as they lay in their graves. He hoped one day trees would sprout and be used as weapons against the slayers of the sailors.
Why no Kurians around here, Torres?
Can't say. Seems they never managed to get installed here. Not really free territory, so to speak, but there's a resistance here. I've heard of a Kurian or two coming to the area, but anyone going to work for them winds up with their throat slit pretty soon. The Reapers can't travel much either. The resistance assembles and smokes them out anywhere they hold up. Every now and then a bunch sweep up from Mexico or down from San Antonio or Corpus Christi, but when they're gone, resistance pops up again.
What did the resistance think of the coastal patrol?
We never did much inshore except try to chase down smugglers, so resistance didn't object to us, I guess. That's just what we heard when we came into the bay. There's only about one or two safe places to visit right up against the shore where Thunderbolt's guns could cover. The old hands told us to sleep on board if we knew what was good for us.
Valentine looked at the overgrown ruins. Palms stood up through roofs. Bougainvillea sprouted everywhere, covering the ruins along the bay further.
Looks like the work of hurricanes.
Carrasco was examining the coast through a pair of binoculars. While on Jamaica, she'd dyed and recut one of Saunders' uniform coats, adding shoulder padding so she could fill it. The middle still hung a little loose, thanks to the dead man's pot belly.
What now, Captain?
According to plan, I'm supposed to be contacted here. And failing that, I need to go inland to Harland. Southern Command has a liaison officer here. He was supposed to stay around the bay, but I'm so overdue, he might have gone back to his base. That's where I need to get to if I'm not met here.
Anything special we are supposed to do?
Act as if this were an ordinary patrol.
Very well. Torres, what was the procedure? Do they have pilots?
No.
So how would Saunders handle it?
Cruise the bay? Anything that looked ocean-going, we were to sink, unless we could board it and were satisfied it belonged to the Corpus Christi Kurians. Her signet was a crane over a sunrise. I think Asian-looking, only with Mexican colors. Stood out like a sore thumb in Texas. If there's any doubt, we'd seize it and bring it back to New Orleans and let the Kurians haggle it out.
Then that's what we'll do. Helm, let's take a look at that inlet to starboard. After the check?
Yeah, if the captain felt like it, he'd let us dock. There's a concrete wharf by the old Brownsville Channel. Some of the harbor joints traded with us. Good place to pick up crabs, lice, and drip from the whores. We were always under orders to go in groups of four at least, armed with rifles and sidearms. And don't try the chow, they give coasties rat meat.
Shall we dine on board tonight, Captain Valentine?
Valentine found himself smiling.
I've eaten rat any number of times. I'm sure Narcisse could spice it up into a state dinner if she had to, Captain.
Torres, what would the captain do if he didn't want to give the men liberty in the port?
We'd raid a shrimp boat for food and leave, sir.
It would be best if the captain decides to grant liberty. It can buy us some time.
They wasted the morning cruising the bay, but saw nothing larger than open fishing boats. Valentine was relieved. He didn't want to arrive at a strange port and start burning local shipping, especially when the success of his mission could depend on the aid, or at least non-interference, of the natives. With that out of the way, the Thunderbolt tied up at the pier near the stagnant channel. A few blocks of cracked concrete buildings leered out at them, garish and misspelled advertisements painted over doorways in a mixture of Spanish and English. An afternoon rain soaked the men tying her up, and the gangway guard took shelter under the stairs to the top deck. Carrasco, her new lieutenant, Valentine, and Post decided to dine one last time in the wardroom. With their combined coaxing, they got the chief to join them. The chief sat uncomfortably at the cramped table, awkward in his civilian clothes.
They're the only ones that weren't oil-stained.
They heard Narcisse's voice shout orders from the galley. With the crew now mostly Jamaican, the dishes reflected that island's preference for spiced chicken and pork dishes, leavened with rice, vegetables, and fresh fruits.
Captain, you, your officers, and the men have more than carried out your part of the bargain. I'm happy to leave the Thunderbolt in the Commodore's flotilla. I know Mr. Post and the Chief will serve you ably.
Post elbowed the Chief. The chief had met a woman in Jamaica, a beauty who could have appeared in one of the old tourism posters in her yellow two-piece bikini, and he had decided to stay with the ship.
Happily ever afters.
Post lifted a glass of lemonade to the chief. Karaska shifted in her seat and rearranged the rice on her plate.
Just see me and the cargo into the hands of my contacts here. You'll take my promise to do anything I can to help you in our common cause. I'll never forget the Thunderbolt and her captain.
The object of his thoughts and memories smiled.
You'll always have a berth on any of our ships and a bed in J-Port.
Karaska stared levelly into his eyes as she spoke, but he saw her jaw tighten after the last sentence. Valentine felt his throat go thick.
Thank you for the offer.
The table sensed a tension and covered it with technical talk about improvements in the ship since the overhaul. It lasted until the chief and the two lieutenants excused themselves. Post closed the cabin door behind him. Karaska reached out and took Valentine's hand.
Sorry. I've been preoccupied since we refloated. We've had no time alone. We're not the first couple sacrificed to the cause. I miss the sound of your heartbeat. It'll be lonely without you.
You have your grandfather, the Caribbean, the ship.
And you have your duty. We're both married in a way, to both of them.
It was a wonderful time, Malia.
You'll always be a part of me, David.
Discipline or no, he kissed her, long and hard. It was agonizing to let her go, knowing that his lips might never meet hers again.
Forgive me.
A full day passed, and no one from the shore tried to make contact with the Thunderbolt. A few idlers gathered to watch the sailors on the Thunderbolt go about their daily duties, but no one requested permission to come on board, and the men who went in groups off the ship claimed no one spoke to them but bar touts.
I'll have to go inland after all.
It was the end of the second day. Karaska looked at Valentine from beneath her black brows, pulling a wet bang out of her eye to do so. They both were plastered with sweat. Even with the windows wide open, the bridge was stifling in the windless harbor. The afternoon rain had succeeded only in dampening the heat.
Have the chief send some people in to look for a critical part. Claim we have a breakdown. Maybe that won't incite too much comment. I don't like the idea of her sitting here tied up to a dock with the cargo on board. People on shore have got to be wondering why the ship looks like a topiary.
Can you pass as a native? From what Torres says, they don't like strangers poking around here. You don't want to be strung up in a tree by your own allies.
They're only allies in the enemy of my enemy is my friend sense. Southern Command never had any luck getting Texas guerrillas to work with us. Except right on the borderlands, where we could arm them and shelter them if they had to run. Not that a Texan ever called it running.
She nodded.
Any orders while you're gone?
I hope to be back, or at least send word in a couple days. If you don't hear from me in 5, go back to Jamaica, plant the trees, and wait for the next Southern Command agent to head south.
Somehow, I don't think there are too many David Valentines to be found. Some woman needs to make more.
Valentine squeezed her arm as he passed out of the bridge and went to his cabin. He smelled the musty odor of wet grog and found Anka waiting, cleaning out his pointed ears with a delicate wooden implement that was part spoon and part chopstick.
I needed a wash. I've put out your things.
Valentine looked at his bunk. His dyed-to-black fatigue pants lay spread on the bed with matching moccasin boots he'd made them last month of Jamaican calfskin and topped by his combat vest and pistol. A canvas knapsack was already loaded with food and water flasks. A felt-brimmed hat with a beadwork band stood atop the pile.
I don't wear hats. Unless it's winter, and even then I like the stocking kind or a coonskin.
Start, my David. You'll blend in better. You want your drum gun?
No. I'm going to travel light and fast.
Then I cannot accompany you.
Sorry, old horse. I will take one of those pike points, though, just in case.
Valentine went down the gangway with a group of sailors going to one of the wharfside cantinas. He wore a rain poncho to conceal his lack of uniform, a borrowed gold earring pinching his ear, and the hat rolled up in a pocket. The men, under Carrasco's lieutenant, pushed two tables together and ordered the inevitable chicken, rice, bean, and tortilla meal. The cantina provided an outhouse for the comfort of its braver or desperate guests, and after a light meal and a lot of boiled water, Valentine excused himself. Feeling a bit like Superman from the old comic books, he exited the outhouse wearing a light leather vest, the knapsack, his weapons belt, and the hat. The poncho was in his knapsack, and the sailor's earring in his pocket. He hiked down what used to be a main street, walking just off the nearly worn-away center line of the road and trying to look like he knew where he was going. Once clear of the harbor side, he turned west out of town, coming to a line of shacks bordering the marshy flats, picturing a map of the Brownsville area in his head. There were many palms above, some delicate-limbed trees, and groves of thick grasses and palmettos. Valentine's nose picked up the faint salt smell of the ocean, but the moist, just overturned rock smell of the marsh was far stronger. In the interest of speed, he stayed to the road, hoping that he would sense trouble before it found him. He fell into a steady jog. When his body warmed to the pace, he fell into his old wolf lope, with hardly a twinge from his leg wound. He stopped when he hit the old interstate, crawled into a thick stand of grass, and napped after emptying one of his flasks and eating some dried fruit and fried bread. Valentine took in the landscape as he rested. The sea had its beauty, but it was refreshing to be on land again, with its confused breezes and variety of bird and animal life. Valentine woke himself when the moon rose. He knew little about this area beyond the large-scale map, and even Torres had been no help. According to his orders, the center of this part of Texas's guerrilla activity was supposedly near the old airport at Harlingen and somewhere called Rio Hondo. The guerrillas saved him the trouble of finding them by finding him. As he trotted up the overgrown interstate running northwest, two men on horseback pulled up on a little rise above him. They had rifles pointed at the stars above out and on their hips, and reins in the other hand, ready to shoot him down or ride him down as circumstances warranted. Valentine stopped and bent over, rubbing his aching left leg.
Yo, down there! You're the damnedest runner I ever saw! You think the devil himself was chasing you, but there's nothing behind you but empty!
Keep your hands away from that gun, stranger!
Like Valentine, he wore only a vest and had a gleaming western tie at his throat. Valentine was too tired for the good cop, bad cop routine.
I hope you're Texas Rangers.
You do? Well, there's some that say that, and it turns out they hope the opposite.
Valentine walked up the man-made hillside, hands above his head.
You'll find out if you give me a chance to talk. My name's Ghost, out of Southern Command in the Washitas. I'm looking for a place called the Academy and your colonel. I don't know his name, but I know the man I'm looking for, a friend of his, Patrick Fields.
Seems to me that if that were the case, you'd be well north of here, heading south.
I came by sea. Handcuff me, hogtie me, whatever. Just bring me either to Fields or your CO.
I'm Sergeant Ranson. This is Corporal Colorado. Colorado, climb down and take his weapons. Pat him down. We're on patrol. We can't just quit whenever we feel like it. I'll send Colorado back for a guard, and they'll take you north.
Valentine warmed to Ranson as a man who made up his mind quickly and correctly.
Should I get out the irons, Gil?
The young man unbuckled Valentine's weapon harness.
No, man seems straight enough. If the story isn't true and he is a spy, he's going about it a mite odd.
Colorado rode off north. Ranson had Valentine walk ahead of him to an old roadside stop on the southbound side of the interstate. It seemed like any other decayed husk of the old world, save for a ladder up to an empty platform where a gasoline sign once stood. Valentine decided it must give a commanding view, day or night, if the moon was out. He smelled water.
Colorado will be back in a couple of hours. Let me go up and take a look around. Do me a favor and walk my horse, would you? A few times around the building will be fine.
Valentine complied, as Ranson made a slow climb to the perch for a long look round. When the ranger returned, Valentine handed the reins over.
In the mood for some coffee, Sergeant?
Ranson's lean face lit up.
You have coffee out of Mexico?
Better. Jamaican.
Holy Moses, why didn't you say so? I ain't had coffee from anywhere east of Padre Island in years. There's a mortar and pestle we use for corn inside, and a coffee pot.
In three quarters of an hour, they were sharing the coffee, the Jamaican beans campfire toasted and stone ground.
Oh, Lord, that's good.
He was lean as a winter wolf and sat in an old wooden chair with long legs stretched across a pile of cordwood.
You aren't worried I drugged it?
Nah, I'd kill you before it got me. Besides, you drank first and I poured. So, you been to sea?
Yes.
I didn't want to say anything to Colorado, but a few of us have been told to keep an eye out for a stranger calling himself Ghost. Seems to me you're mighty overdue.
It wasn't a pleasure, Cruz.
Delay's beyond your control. I know what you mean. I was on a patrol once on the Rio Grande. It was supposed to last a month. They ended up chasing us west. We didn't make it back till Christmas. 5 months overdue. My wife was collecting death pension already.
So the Currians have the river.
The whole damn valley. Mexican Currians, they call them the Alcaldes, like they was old aristocracy or something. Good farmland, some of the best in the world. The folks there smuggle us out what they can. How are things up north? We don't get news unless it comes roundabout.
Hard, but Southern Command is holding out.
And what were you out for? Intelligence?
I'll be happy to tell you if your colonel or Mr. Fields okays it.
Ranson winked with one whole side of his face.
Loose lips. Whatever that means. My dad used to say it when he was playing his cards close to the chest. Personally, I like a set of loose lips. Especially if they're attached to a genuine redhead.
Two more riders arrived with Colorado at the dawn.
Sergeant Hughes says we're supposed to cut our patrol short and see this man back to the academy.
Kind of him. Switch to the relief horse. I expect they want him there pronto. Wish we had a spare horse for you, young man.
I expect he can run some more. He did pretty well there at the end on the road. I'd like to see that trick again.
While the sergeant passed on his report on the patrol, Colorado readied the horses, placing the saddlebags and rifle sheaths on the patient animals. Ranson mounted, still chewing on a snatched breakfast. They set off, Colorado in the lead and moving his horse at a brisk walk, quickly enough so Valentine had to force himself to hurry at a pace just below a jog, which he found increasingly annoying.
I'm gonna run. It's easier than walking like this.
He broke into a trot. Colorado kicked his horse to a trot, and Ranson followed. The sergeant smiled at some inner joke. Valentine set his jaw and ran faster, passing the trotting horse at a steady lope.
What the hell?
Colorado touched his heels to the horse's flanks, and it broke into a canter. Valentine had to pour it on to keep up with the cantering horse, but he did so. His whole body seemed suffused in warmth, a warmth that slowly grew uncomfortable. Even a wolf couldn't move at this rate for long. His legs filled with a fiery ache, and his heart beat like a duck's wings. The sweating horse tired of the race as well, and kept trying to break into a gallop.
Cut it out, Colorado! You killed a damn horse, or our friend!
Perspiration crusted with dust coated Valentine's face, but he kept pace until Colorado halted, fighting the urge to lean forward to catch his wind. He slowed back down to a walk matching the horses, controlling his breath as best he could.
Shit! They shouldn't have called you Ghost. It should have been Shanks. I never seen, hell, never heard of a man able to run like that.
You done treating our ally like a bastard?
Ally? We're taking him under guard, ain't we?
If them reapers showed up, he'd be guarding us, not the other way around. Don't you know a hunter when you meet one, you damn fool?
My pa used to say those hunters were just good liars is all. There's nothing to that story.
Apple didn't fall far from the tree.
Ranson's eyes shared the joke with Valentine, knowing the cat heard. The academy was easy to find. It bordered on a defunct airport whose runways now served as a rifle range. The airport's concourses and some of the hangars had been demolished, but the control tower still dominated the camp, reinforced with a pyramid of sandbags and timber all the way to the top. On the other side of the old military education campus, there was a cemetery, graves arranged facing a giant statue that seemed familiar yet out of place to Valentine.
It's a model of the one that stood in Washington. Marines raising the flag at the top of Mount Suribachi on Iwo Jima.
Valentine realized he had seen the photo it was based on.
There was a hell of a fight in the Pacific in 1945. The men who finally got up there and planted that flag were from Texas.
Valentine remembered it differently, but he was in no mood to discuss military history minutia at the moment. Ranson brought him through the rows of barracks, one lot vacant like a missing tooth, and took him to the brick headquarters. Like the control tower, it was layered in sandbags and barbed wire, with hard points guarding both entrances. Valentine retied his hair when they moved through the door past a sentry.
Don't worry about washing up. The colonel likes to hear news first. Everything else waits. Well, unless you're bleeding. Well, bleeding badly, that is.
Moving down the wood-floored hallway, they approached a reception desk. It was a beautifully carved piece of wood, like many of the items decorating the entrance hallway. Valentine got the impression every square foot of wall space was covered by a painted portrait or photograph. The only ones he recognized were Sam Houston and the Texas United States presidents. The woman at the desk wore a cheerful Mexican print blouse and a ready smile, but Valentine saw a pistol lying right next to the phone.
Courier for the colonel. Tell him it's Longbow Resolution. The ghost is finally haunting us.
Another ranger walked down the hall and out the door. Saddlebags hung over uniformed shoulders. Valentine found the contrast between the rough, tanned, mustachioed men and the ornate furnishings interesting. The receptionist looked with interest at Valentine from under curled eyelashes.
Oh, map room? Second floor.
Colorado, you can go get yourself fed. I'll see things through from here.
The younger man took the dismissal well. He hesitated only a moment before speaking.
Well, I'll see if I can snag us some bottles of beer for when you're finished, Sarge.
You do that, Colorado. Thanks.
Good luck with the colonel, Shanks.
Colorado offered his hand.
I hope there's no hard feelings over our little race.
Valentine shook it and thanked him. Ranson led him to a white-painted staircase, and they ascended past photographs of cities filled with pavement, glass, and steel. Valentine loved maps, and the map room captivated him. A 4-foot globe stood by one wall-spanning bookcase, but the other walls were covered with maps. A long library table dominated the center of the room, placed on an oriental rug spread on the polished wooden floor. Tall windows lighted the room. Chairs stood beneath the mounted maps on the walls. One of the maps, showing the Rio Grande region of Texas, was festooned with pins and colored ribbons. Valentine walked up to an older, glassed-in map of the state, which looked to date from Texas's earliest days. A handsomely dressed Latino opened the door and held it open for the colonel. The colonel of the Texas Rangers, officer commanding the academy, had undoubtedly been a tall man in the days before his confinement to a wheelchair. Valentine guessed he must have stood close to 6'5 at one time, judging from how high he sat in the wooden metal contraption he wheeled himself around in. He was gray-haired and clear-eyed, and gave the impression of lively vitality from the waist up, like an alert prairie dog whose hind legs are hidden in his burrow. He wore a bronze star enclosed by a circle, pinned over a frilly white and blue ribbon.
Colonel Stephen Hibbert, Texas Rangers. Glad to meet you.
The colonel extended his hand. The Texans were devoted handshakers.
Thank you for your hospitality, Colonel Hibbert. My name's Valentine, but I'd prefer if you just referred to me as Smith, or Ghost, in your paperwork, if I end up being mentioned.
We generally call him the colonel.
Well, whatever you're comfortable with, young man. This is my chief of staff, Major Zacharias.
After another handshake, the colonel moved on to business. They sat at one end of the long library table, so all eyes could be at the same level.
Well, Ghost, your contact here went back north a month or so ago on a courier run. He didn't have much choice. He told us about you and asked for our assistance. Fields is a good man. About all he ever asked us for in the past was information about the state of things in Texas and on the Mexican border. And a couple of times he brought us warning of troop movements that saved lives. I'm willing to do whatever I can to help Southern Command. He said you'd have something needing to get north.
Yes, sir. I'm to give you part of my cargo in exchange for your assistance. It's a weapon. Deadliest thing I've ever seen used on a Reaper.
Valentine showed the colonel the quickwood pike point he'd brought and explained the catalytic action the wood had in a Reaper's bloodstream. The colonel and his chief of staff exchanged looks.
Well, now, that's good news. Some kind of silver bullet, huh?
The colonel shifted his weight in his chair.
And you've seen this work with your own two eyes?
Yes, colonel.
Be Because I've heard tales of big medicine against the Kurians before, and every one of them turned out about as effective as the bulletproof vest made out of old sticks and beads the Indians wore.
Not just me. Others, too. You don't have to wonder if I'm crazy. I'll leave with you what I can spare, some saplings you can plant and some lumber you can turn into weapons. We found that crossbow bolts and spear points work best.
Our armorer will take a look at what you've done.
It's a lot easier than trying to go in and behead them, that's for sure. Time is important, Colonel. Every day the ship waits in harbor...
Easy now, son. South Bay isn't really our ground, not that it's Kurian. If we ride in armed for Reapers and offload you, someone will talk. If this stuff is as important as you say it is, we might want to keep it as a surprise for the Bloodsuckers. Major, let's put Harbor Master into effect.
Sicarius made a note on a clipboard as the colonel spun his wheels back to Valentine.
You get back to your ship and bring it across the bay to the entrance of the old intracoastal shipping channel. There's a white lighthouse there manned by some of the Corpus Christi crew. We've got a spy there, and this sounds important enough for him to break his cover. He'll knock out their radio and make sure our rangers grab the place. We'll make it look like a simple hit and loot. When you see two blue lights burning, one on top of the other, bring your ship in as close as the tide will let you, and we'll start loading up your cargo. This will happen 24 hours after you get safely back to your vessel. Questions?
Two blue lights, vertically.
Valentine sagged into his chair in exhausted relief. The colonel's quick mind relieved him of his last few worries about getting his prize to the Rangers safely. He shook himself back to the present.
No questions, Colonel. Some food and a few hours sleep, and I'll be ready to go.
Well, you'll get more than that. There's still some things we have to organize. You'll have until dawn tomorrow to eat and rest up. That okay by you?
Better than okay.
Major Zacharias, you'll have operational command. Put Flagstaff in charge of trains and logistics. Use Three Feathers reserve riders for the main force. I want plenty of scouts, too. Send two couriers now and get Harbor Master going. Ranson, you'll take our friend back to his ship and go on board as liaison.
Can I bring Colorado along, Colonel? About time you started working on a longer line.
Sure. How often does a man get a chance to go to sea nowadays, even if it is just a ride across the harbor? Mr. Valentine, we'll meet again when your cargo is here, safe and sound.
Night on the harbor. The old lighthouse near the wrecked causeway had two lights burning. Valentine watched from his familiar bridge perch as the ship's boats and a commandeered shrimp boat moved quickwood, men, and material from ship to shore. There was nothing for him to do on shore, save hear Flagstaff give gruff orders to the rangers and contingent of laborers he commanded. Oxen stood in their traces, and smaller horse wagons held supplies for the 200 riders Zacharias brought to guard the precious cargo. The 8-man garrison of the lighthouse was under lock and key, though 5 of them expressed an interest in moving inland with the rangers. Valentine idly listened to the sound of waves lapping against the ship as he pulled his tiny collection of books from its railed shelf, lulled by the hint of motion as the Thunderbolt rocked at anchor. He felt melancholy. The Thunderbolt had become a home, and it was time to leave. He would miss the sound of the sailors talking as they washed down the decks in the morning, the smell of good coffee, the wide horizons of the sea. He thought of his father and his description of the charm of naval service. Duty at sea, especially when you were out months at a stretch, sounds like you're away from everything, that you'd be lonely and homesick, but you aren't. To a sailor, the ship is a home he takes with him. It's like traveling with your job and all your neighbors. There's nothing like it. His father had been right. He also liked being able to hit the Kurians where he chose, instead of spending all his time parrying blows. Moving men, their food, and equipment was simplified by the tonnage a ship could carry. A real navy, well handled, could make the Kurian seaboard spend far more of its time garrisoning harbors and seaside towns out of fear that an occupying force would appear over the horizon. The free zones in the Appalachians, the Ozarks, and the Rockies would be given breathing room. But he was just one officer, a spy saboteur trained to work inside the Kurian zone. Putting together real sea power would take combinations of time and resources the Kurians took pains to prevent. The great ports of the world were solidly in Kerr's grip. But with Quickwood...
The Quickwood beams are going now, Captain. These Texans are organized.
Valentine nodded.
They have to be. This pocket doesn't have any life weavers. They're going up against the Reapers with small arms and guts, and a lot of people on farms and in towns slipping them news and supplies. They're smart, but they don't fight over the Rio Valley or the coast. Nothing that's important to the Kurians. Texas is a big place. They got distance on their side as long as they stay mobile.
I'd always heard they were just bushwhackers in uniform.
Ranson, who'd approached and caught the tail end of the conversation, cut in to elaborate. He described how the Rangers would go into some one-horse village and relocate the residents.
Then a few Reapers and Quislings come riding in. Life sign reads normal. They think it's just another town. But it's a town armed to the teeth with men who know how to use their guns. We got a heck of an intelligence network. Most everyone between the Rio and San Antonio city limits knows what to do if they see a column coming into the area. We use a lot of heliographs, since the sun's almost always shining. The Kurians have been burned too many times. Now they only roll through with big pacification raids. When that happens, the Rangers scatter.
How much do you know about the Quickwood?
Farther back on the ship, proof of the efficacy of the weapon stood on the upper deck. A dead Reaper, frozen as a statue, with skin hard as tree bark, stood gripping the ship's rail and canopy, though not truly lifeless, at least in the vegetable sense. The Reaper was beginning to sprout tiny green leaves.
Everything. I'll give another briefing to their weapons people. I'm going to leave them with some lumber and saplings. Want to throw in your seed pouch?
They'll need it more in the Ozarks.
I'll carry it there for you, Will.
You got enough equipment. What with that ugly-ass gun you towed, Val? And there's still a lot of miles ahead of us. I'll bring it myself. You'll need somebody around to carry out your god-awful plans anyway, won't you?
Valentine felt his eyes moisten.
Why the change of mind?
More a change of heart. When I was watching the chief and his girl on Jamaica, and you and, well, I got lonely for a woman. The beach beauties were willing, but I want to find my wife. Tell her I was wrong, she was right.
Valentine remembered their conversation before the mutiny.
About the system.
When we first got married, we didn't know each other that well. I was in uniform then, but it was for the food and the security. Gail was a sharp girl, figured out I didn't really like them or my job. We talked about us getting a posting way out on some frontier, running for Arkansas. We used to talk like that a lot. Funny thing was, after I got married to her, all of a sudden, I wanted to do better, have better housing and better food for us, or her, really. I went officer, Mustanged up from a sergeant to a junior lieutenant. Part of the process was indoctrination, of course. Lectures at the new Universal Church building, you know the routine. Then I had to spew the same stuff to my men, all about mankind poisoning and ruining the earth, crime and overcrowding and starvation and homelessness. Then the shit that came down in 22, and how the Kurians came to restore natural order, all that Darwin stuff they come up with about men needing control. Of course, the Kurians never admit that they probably started it all. They made it sound like they saved us from extinction. But anyway, I started to believe it. You probably can't understand.
But I do. I've heard a few speakers for the church. While they're talking, it seems reasonable enough. It takes the next drained body you see to set you straight again.
Well, Gail and I grew more distant. She didn't like my talking about making captain or joining the Coastal Marines to advance faster. I was drinking a little too much on days off with the others. But it was the baby that did it.
Baby? You never said anything about children.
It would have been a baby, I guess. Gail didn't want to have it. She couldn't bring a child into the world for them. She aborted it. I hate to think how. I found out, said something stupid. I think I quoted the New Waters law on abortion like it was scripture. She took off. I don't know where. Left me a note with her wedding ring. Maybe you can replace this with a brass one. Yeah, at first I was actually glad to be rid of her. I thought her opinions might be preventing me from getting promoted.
He ran his hands through his multi-toned hair in frustration, gripping the locks at the back of his head as if trying to tear the memories out before continuing.
I only realized later, after she was gone, she was the thing that kept me going. All of a sudden, I was ashamed every time I put on my uniform. I hated the job. I hated the people. Drinking helped me forget. Let me go to sleep. Pretty soon, it helped me make it through the day. Then wake up. Thanks to you, I got a part of my life back. I owe you that, whatever your methods. Now, I want the rest of me.
Valentine stood on shore with his volunteers, a smattering of Jamaicans, many of the Thunderbolt's remaining Marines, and a few sailors who decided to go back to the Ozarks to look for their families. The group said their farewells to their comrades from the Thunderbolt. Narcisse sat atop a wagon, distributing voodoo amulets and cheek-smacking kisses. Captain Carrasca, dressed again in the looser pirate clothes Valentine had first seen her wearing, said goodbye to each of the men as they walked down the gangway. When she got to Anka, she hugged him, her outspread hands making it just to the other side of his armpits. When that was over, she gave him a wooden tube that Valentine thought looked like a bamboo flute. Anka bowed. Valentine stood at the entry port last.
I'm glad Will is going with you. I'd give almost anything to keep Narcisse in the galley. Won't be sorry to see the grogs go. We can do without their unique odor. But the two of you will be missed.
Torres will make you a fine officer of Marines.
Yes. He's already polished those railroad tracks 3 times, and it's only been a day. One more thing.
Carrasca stepped forward and embraced him in turn. Post tactfully drew the men away from the gangplank, and the pair stepped behind the lifeboat davit.
If I ask you to do something for me, will you do it?
You shouldn't have to ask that question, my love. You're the best thing that's happened to me in years.
He kissed her, softly and lingeringly.
When you're back safe in your mountains, write me. We used to get courier pouches every now and then from Southern Command, years ago before the Koreans set up their intercoastal patrol chain. Now smugglers get newspapers and pamphlets to us through your logistics men. The Commodore would like to see more, and so would I. Maybe you can set up a new mail run. From your stories, it sounds like you have the experience. Anything. Just let me know that you're okay.
It's a promise. Write me as well.
I will.
They stood looking at each other, neither sure of what to say. She smiled.
Almost forgot. I made you something.
She reached into the baggy pants and pulled out another leather pouch. Stitched into the leather was the legend, Thunderbolt, Jamaica, Haiti, Texas, 2070, Captain Malia Carrasca. Valentine took the pouch. It felt as though it were full of a lot of coin-sized objects, only lighter.
Your quickwood seeds.
Look.
He opened it and extracted a handful of mahjong pieces. The bamboo pieces were delicately painted.
Your work.
Of course. Should be rain-proof, I lacquered them enough. You and Anka and Post and Narcisse can play.
Thanks, but damn, I feel like I should send you away with something.
You have. More than you know.
Her eyes glistened with tears.
How's that?
Hope. Someday we'll have ships going up the Mississippi to your Ozarks. I have a feeling things are about to get better.
Hope for someday, then.
Someday. That's all our generation has. Hope.
She raised her chin.
Texas is waiting. I don't wish the men to see me teary-eyed. Back to hard-nosed Captain. Captain.
Yes, sir.
Valentine saluted. She returned the gesture, her emotions under control again. Valentine felt the old wall go up, as if they were strangers. Inspiration came to him.
I left that old Coastal Marine uniform coat in the closet in my room. You're welcome to that. Doesn't mean much to me, and it won't do me any good where I'm going. All I'm keeping are the boots and the pants I dyed.
The wall vanished.
I'll make earrings out of the buttons.
Better and better.
He caressed her cheek with the back of his hand. Carrasca, caress. He smiled to himself.
Goodbye, Malia.
Adios, David. You can always find a home with us on Jamaica. You know that?
I do.
He hurried off the Thunderbolt. Valentine couldn't let his mind dwell on the idea. 4 days later, Valentine and Post sat in the Academy map room. A pair of electric fans fought a losing battle with the lingering summer heat. Anka stood behind and in between them. His bulk wouldn't allow him to do anything but demolish the antiques in the room, and the grog had declined the offer by one of the rangers at the meeting to go seek out a piano bench. The colonel spoke from the head of the library table after hearing the reports from the various rangers involved.
Well, we've accomplished part one. Now comes the hard part. getting those wagons up to the Ozarks. Zacharias, before my encounter with that piece of shrapnel, you used to be in charge of our northern areas. What's your suggestion?
Zacharias' dark eyes studied the map, as if looking for something that would appear if he just stared long enough.
With the kind of men we'll need to guard the wagons, there's no question of slipping it through the San Antonio-Austin-Houston belt. Though I bet we could get north of Corpus Christi. We're going to have to swing west of San Antonio. Not too far west. We can't be moving across the desert either. The hill country could shield us and water us.
Well, that means crossing the ranch.
The ranch? What ranch?
You've never heard of the ranch?
Valentine began to shake his head, then stopped.
Wait. You mean what I think you mean. That's a legend in a lot of places. No one's ever proved it true.
What's this? I've never even heard the story.
The ranch is a real place. Maybe elsewhere sometimes it is and sometimes it's not. But I'll tell you, it's true in Central Texas. We've seen it. The ranch, Mr. Post, is kind of an experimental farm the Currians run. According to our sources, they use it to come up with new life forms, biological servants, even something other than humans to squeeze the juice out of. Intelligent, but easier to handle.
There's a lot of strange sights to be seen in those hills. The Currian settlements give it a wide berth. There's a huge stretch of empty ringing it. The ranch gives us our best chance of getting up to the Dallas area and past it. Then it's into the pine woods of East Texas and you'll be home. Getting back will be easier with no cargo to guard. We can either break up and get home in small groups the direct way or trace our route back.
It's your part of the country. If that's what you want to do, I'll support it. Whatever gives us our best chance of getting through without fighting.
Colonel, if we're going to try to get across the ranch, I'd like to have Baltz along.
I'll send word.
What's his specialty?
Her specialty. Back in the cattle drive days, they used to have one or two old bulls to lead all the other cattle, especially for things like river crossings. Baltz is kind of like that, except she ain't a bull. Bullheaded, oh yeah. She grew up in the ranch, worked there, not in the secret buildings, on the outside. She knows the land. We'll need her and her staff sure as a hot summer sunset.
The Ranch, Central Texas, November. Texas, at 266,000 square miles, is larger than any country of old Europe and could fit a few eastern states within her expanse. The same could almost be said of the lands around the ranch, which stretch from the hill country west of San Antonio in the south to Abilene in the north, taking up the Edwards Plateau in the west and ending at the old I-35 in the east. Why the Currians wanted such a vast expanse for their experiments can only be guessed at. Perhaps the research stations they established on the Colorado River and the San Angelo area needed isolation. The thorough depopulation of the area supported this theory. It is one of the few parts of the Currian Zone run without the aid of Quisling forces. Its borders are watched by Grogs, either hardened to or oblivious of what goes on in the hinterland of the region. It is one of the most beautiful parts of the Lone Star State, a land of limestone bluffs over twisted rivers, of rolling hills dotted with wildflowers and fragrant of sage. Longhorns, wearing no brand at all, roam the valleys alongside buffalo, with antelope watching from the hilltops, and white-tailed deer sheltering in the cedar and oak forests. Cypress grows in the river valleys, and zone-tail hawks drift above the southern tip of the American Great Plains. If the wildlife could talk, they could tell of new, strange inhabitants wandering the hills. David Valentine scratched the bristle on his chin in thought, raking his memory. Only one animal on Earth looked like that, and they were called
zebras. By God!
Yes, that's right. Zebras.
Baltz was a square-built woman, a thick, tough-skinned German as solid as a Gothic cathedral. She rode with Valentine and her staff at the front of the wagon train when she wasn't driving her buckboard or conferring with the ranger scouts on the best path for the column to take. Her staff consisted of a tow-headed 13-year-old girl named Eve, a walking suntan who was all scrawny limbs under a face that twitched like a rabbit when she thought. There was also an assortment of animals, ranging from riding and pack horses to dogs, cats, and the only chickens Valentine had ever known to lay eggs while traveling.
The zebras, David, come from an old I guess you'd call it a zoo near Kerrville. It was home to ostriches, too, and they're thriving in the hill country. The damn things will kick your head clean off if you startle them, so don't wander into the brush to take a shit without looking for something with a feathery white ass. Funny thing is, you come up on them head on, they turn and run. You sneak up behind, swish whack.
Baltz had a direct earthiness that came from better than 40 years of life in the open. She wore bandanas over hair, mouth, and neck when the dust kicked up and settled on the broad brim of her hat, and an ancient pair of curving, head-wrapping sunglasses.
Are we on the ranch lands yet?
We're just skirting the edge. We've left the grog pickets behind. What they do if they cut our trail, I don't know. They don't go into the ranch proper, at least not anymore, even following an enemy. They ain't that dumb. No offense intended to your big-ass shadow there. The ranch has its own security. One relief? The hissers don't wander these hills, so we don't have to worry about life sign.
No offense understood.
Anka walked alongside Valentine's horse, his long rifle protected from the dust by a soft leather sheath.
Perhaps the unusual animals are the reason people think this place is used by Kerr for experiments.
We don't think. We know. I worked their lands when I was nearer your age, David, or even younger. I was an electrician. I handled the lines running between the stations. Being a specialist means you see some things they don't want you to tell about. So they made me live on the ranch with some of the other people they couldn't do without. About 12 years ago, they decided to clean house and bring in some new people. They showed up, and I didn't like the way they were rounding us up for a meeting. I got Eve, jumped in a Hummer, and rode it till the oil ran out, then ran south on foot. I never saw much of what was going on inside the stations. I just worked the lines outside. When I had to work a box indoors, they blindfolded me until I got to the utility room. But even outside, you saw things. Once, I heard some kind of muttering in the underbrush, and I looked down, and these two pigs were nosing through some scrub. They weren't grunting. They were forming something like words I just didn't understand. They've had a lot of trouble with breakouts. Keeping a pig in a pen and keeping a pig that thinks like you do is something else entire.
I can imagine.
He could imagine. Too much. The hills felt as if they were waiting for him to turn his back. He would have almost preferred to hear that they were stiff with reapers.
Can you, boy? I wonder. There was a rumor that once something got out. They blasted a whole quarter of the place with nerve agents. Hold them up here a minute. Me and the dogs are going to scout that tree line.
The wagon train always got underway before dawn. Each move was a two-segment effort. The mounted screen of ranger scouts moved a day ahead of the column under Zacharias's lieutenant, charting the course for the wagons and choosing the best spots for stream crossings, resting places, and the next night's campsite. The convoy of 15 wagons and the rest of the escort made up the second segment. The convoy spent only about 6 hours a day in motion. The oxen pulled better with frequent rest stops and outspans, and those always meant at least a couple of hours of delay while teams were unhitched and then reorganized. Valentine left much of the management of the column to the Texans, and he and Post worked at getting their men to patrol effectively alongside the Rangers. With their baggage in the wagons, the mix of former Marines and sailors had to carry only their arms and ready ammunition and perhaps a canteen or walking stick. There was some grumbling about marching while all the Texans got to ride, and there was some comment by the Texans about having to guard and support foreign mouths, though there was no complaint about the quality of Narcissa's chuck wagon cooking. Anka and his surviving grogs stuck close to Valentine as he moved about, like children keeping close to their parent among strangers. He and Post had talked over the men's adaptation to the trail and their new allies.
If we run into anything, our men will be glad the horsemen gave them warning, and the Texans will be grateful for all our rifles.
They both agreed that even after days in the wagons, sweeping wide around San Antonio, the column was still moving like a balky horse. Steak on the Hoof followed the wagon train, driven so as to muddle the wagon tracks and footprints. Regular barbecues in the evening gradually brought the two camps together, until Texans were teaching Jamaicans to play horseshoes and guitars, and the Mariners were enthralling their hosts with stories and music and dances and songs from the other side of the Gulf. By the time they entered the lands Baltz identified as being on the ranch proper, the column was as cohesive and cooperative as Valentine could have hoped, due to habit more than leadership or training. At rest halts, Valentine's soldiers took over the picket duty, fanning out to gather some of the seasonal crops growing wild, plentiful apples, squash, and pumpkins. Their foraging made a difference to the barbecues, and with the nights growing longer as October waned, the evening meals became more leisurely. Narcisse contributed her own ideas about cooking to the drive. Some of the Texans began to anticipate the nights when she cooked Creole dishes. The variety was welcome with night after night of slaughtered beef and preserved food. It was at one peaceful camp, as Valentine walked the picket line with Post to make sure the sentries were under cover with good fields of vision, that a pair of the Thunderbolt sailors, one Jamaican and one former coastal patrolman, came running down from a grass-covered hill.
Captain, there's some kind of big animals on the other side of this hill. They're making a hell of a noise.
The old New Orleans hand moved from one foot to the other like a school kid asking for a trip to the toilet. The cat hardened his ears. It sounded like construction work or logging. He thought he heard a tree being pushed over.
Post, find Baltz, please. Tell her to meet me on top of that hill. Let the camp know we've seen something, but I doubt there's immediate danger. They wouldn't be making so much noise if they meant to cause trouble. Take my horse back, would you?
Valentine dismounted and placed a drum in his submachine gun and shouldered the weapon. He spoke to the men.
Let's have a look.
Sir, that gun ain't gonna do much against what's on the other side of this hill.
We can always outrun it.
Two of us get away then. The two fastest.
They filed back up the hill and began to crawl through the grass and brush when they reached the crest. Valentine looked back toward the camp and saw Baltz and Eve trotting toward their observation point.
Striper, go back down a ways and show them where we are.
The Jamaican nodded and crawled backwards out of sight. Valentine heard the sound of another tree tipping and looked into the valley. They were huge quadrupeds. More strange wildlife of Central Texas he couldn't imagine.
You've got to be kidding. Those are elephants with two trunks, or is it one trunk cut in two?
Can't see too well, sir. My eyes have been fading since I turned 30. See how they're using tools?
Valentine did see. The gray giants were using picks and shovels to dig in a clearing they had enlarged in a patch of woods. Other elephants used their foreheads to knock trees over, facing outward from the clearing.
What did I tell you, boy?
Baltz had crept up on her haunches. The girl watched silently from behind.
Don't that beat all? Them fants looks like three or four families down there. They're getting set for winter. They're making a windbreak. Some of the trees they're leaving up will be pushed together to make sort of a roof. They don't like the cold. Don't use fire, though. They talk, and you can hear them a long way away. The dogs pick up stuff below our hearing frequency. I knew we'd run into some fants in the next day or two. The dogs signaled it.
Why are they digging?
Food storage. That's an old riverbed, and they're gonna put stuff they gathered in the clay. They figured out how to dry fruit. You'll see apples all over the place lying on stones.
The Kurians thought they could feed off those? They look like they could stomp a reaper.
Nah, the Grogs hunt them with tranquilizers from horseback or vehicles. The fans haven't really worked out for them. I don't think they did much research on elephants. The wild things had a family loyalty they didn't count on. Upping the intelligence a couple of degrees was one of their dumber moves. We'd best get away from here soon, though. If there are fants around, there might be hunters. Though the tracks I've seen today don't show it.
You want us to move at night?
Just for a couple more hours.
Light'll be gone soon. Let's get moving, then. Eve, don't you ever say anything?
No, sir.
Eve's eyes were wide on the elephants.
You'd better go pack up the menagerie.
The girl took one long look, then scampered off.
Come on, boy. Sightseeing's over. We should get away from here.
Is she a relative?
She's been with me since she was a babe in arms. The Kurians had a research station in a crossroads town called Eden. I never found out what they were breeding. There was a fire, and they called in everyone with two arms and two legs to help fight it. Well, for some reason, there were human babies at this station. Most of them died account of the smoke. They dragged them out in this cart cage contraption. Looked to be 5 or maybe 6 infants in this cage. I saw her fingers moving and got her out. She started coughing up a storm, and even with all the noise she was making, I snuck her to my truck. I didn't know who to trust, so I started living out of my truck with her in it. Whenever I had to deal with anyone else, I put her in a tool case, with air holes, of course. She seemed to pick up on the danger. Even though she was barely crawling, she'd keep quiet for hours until I opened it up again.
The next day, it was Baltz who summoned Valentine. She sat her horse beneath a steel tower, a pair of power lines hanging from the arms.
This is funny, Captain.
Valentine startled. It was the first time she had ever called him anything other than his first name, or boy.
You don't mean funny ha-ha, I take it.
No. Funny scary. This is a main source line. It runs back up to an oil-burning plant in Abilene. It's dead, and I mean long dead. I haven't been this deep into the ranch in years, but I'd say this hasn't carried current in 2 or 3 years, judging from bird and insect activity. I climbed the tower and had a close look.
Maybe they found a new power source?
You know the Currians, son. They don't bother with something that's working. Civic improvements are the last thing on their mind. You're talking about a shutdown to at least half the ranch. Probably more if this line is dead.
Maybe they gave up on these experiments. Found them unproductive?
That might be. They have the patience of Job, though, which makes sense considering they don't die. What's wrong, guys?
Her assorted mutts were whining worriedly and slinking around behind her horse. Valentine's horse began to toss its head. He dismounted and soothed the animal.
It's coming from that brush over there.
Valentine unlatched the flap on his .45's holster. He handed his reins to Baltz and pulled his machete from its saddle sheath.
That's what I call a pig sticker.
A grog would have shot by now. This isn't the right time of day for a reaper, but I'm not taking any chances. Maybe he's got a motorcycle helmet on.
Valentine cursed himself for not carrying one of Post's spearheads. He took a few cautious steps toward the brush, every nerve alert. He heard grass move, and whatever was crawling through the brush changed course at his approach. Valentine made ready to leap forward or back, gun in his hand and machete held ready to swing. A sound like 50 castanets came from the brush. It sounded familiar, only too loud. He hadn't turned up his ears that much. What kind of rattler would make that much noise? He found out when the snake struck from cover. The king of all rattlers, its head as large as a melon, lashed out with mouth gaping and fangs pointed down and forward. It aimed for Valentine's thigh. A blur of reflexes saved him from a strike moving faster than the eye could follow. He spun, pulling his leg out of the way as he brought the blade around and down as fast as a propeller. The fine steel edge severed the neck of the rattler 2 feet below the neck, and the head flopped to the grass, biting at nothing. The decapitated body thrashed back and forth, rattled still buzzing angrily.
Jesus, that's a hell of a snake!
Valentine breathed until his heart slowed and the burning above his kidneys faded.
You moved faster than the damn snake, boy. I didn't know what happened till it was over. You touched by God or something?
Or something. Don't tell me the Currians made smart, venomous reptiles.
I don't think it was smart, creeping up on all of us like that.
If it wasn't smart, then why did they bother? Breed a few thousand of them and drop them on farmland in the Ozarks from plains?
I wouldn't put it past them, but they're new here. Deadlines, big snakes, no grog patrols away from the borders. It adds up to something. I'd say the ranch is under new management.
Anyone see a sign that said Animal Farm?
The reference was lost on Baltz.